Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi folks, welcome to another political chat with myself and Dan, and today we are going to be talking about something that's, I think, actually quite risky, because the political temperature in Britain is really high at the moment, and we're going to do our best to stay within the rules and do everything that we should do, but I am a bit worried about it. I'm a bit worried we might get in some trouble for it. If you appreciate the commentary that we provide, please do go to lowseas.com, sign up for £5 a month, help us keep the lights on, because who knows where all of this goes. Anyway, so today we're going to be talking about the murder of Henry Nowak and the conviction of Vikram Digra, because the body cam footage is out, and what this means in conjunction with the parliamentary debate on sexual assault and ethnicity that took place in Parliament yesterday. This, I think, is all part of the same problem. And what we are seeing, I think, is the beginning of the end of the multicultural state and multiculturalism as an ideology in the United Kingdom. That doesn't mean that we are witnessing the end of a multicultural society, but who knows where this goes?
Well, the modus operandi of the British state for the past 30 years has been to hush up stuff like this, to push it away, to memory hole it. If somebody's family gets, a family member gets murdered or blown up at a concert or whatever it is, or hacked to pieces, the British state even have a department that goes out to that person and coaches them on how to give a statement to the press, which is reinforcing the multicultural line of the British state. So this is how the British state operates.
Yes, it's literally called the Nudge Unit. It was founded by the government, I think it was in 2014, but has now actually been made separate to the government and farms out its services to governments around the world, incidentally.
Right.
You didn't know that, right? It's been made private.
Anyway, successful British export.
Is one of the few. But you are completely correct, I think. The purpose of the ideology of the British state is to prevent any kind of friction between communities and maintain multiculturalism. This is why Hassan Piker was banned from Britain. They didn't care that he was insulting Israel. What they cared about, he was inciting tensions between Muslims and Jews.
Yes, I mean, that is certainly the a soft way of saying that the purpose of the British state is to replace the native people.
Yes, but anyway, so let's begin about the events of the murder of Henry Nowak. So this is the phone call that was received by the brother of Vikram Digra to the police, not the ambulance services, to let them know that Henry deserved to be stabbed because he was a racist.
Police emergency.
Yeah, we've just been attacked by someone racially. Yeah, this...
Right.
He just attacked it. Cookies to start off. Huh? Sorry, we just got attacked racially by some white person.
Right, okay. Whereabouts are you?
We're on Belmont Road.
Just out in the street, are you?
Sorry?
You're just in the street?
Yeah, literally. I just parked on my car to come home and he's attacked my brother.
Right. So, a just flagrant lie, but invoking the sacred mantras of the multicultural state. Yeah. I'm a minority. I've been racially attacked, abused, assaulted by a white person. Therefore, prime yourself. You know who the villain is. You know who the victim is when you arrive.
He knew exactly what to say to elevate this directly to the top of the police's priority list, which is we are a minority and we have been racially attacked by a white man.
Yes.
That instant, since McPherson inquiry, that goes straight to the top of the police priorities, and he's framed it in such a way as to elicit maximum possible sympathy. And as you said, this is a guy who knows full well that this young lad has been stabbed multiple times, including through the lungs, and he was not calling an ambulance in the golden hour when his life could have been saved.
Yes, I mean, and we know he knows. I mean, his mother has hidden the knife at this point, taken the knife, hidden it. They've obviously... He's phoning because he's like, right, okay, what can I do to cover my brother? Yeah, you've got to provide this kind of ideological cover for him.
Yeah. I mean, if he really wanted to cover his brother, if he'd phoned an ambulance first, his brother would have ended up on, you know, a serious assault charge.
Yeah.
Grievous harm charge.
Possibly even attempted murder.
Yep, but not an actual murder charge.
Yes. Would have been more sensible, but he thought that he could invoke the sacred rights of the state using his status as a first-class citizen.
Yes, the status over the natives who are second-class citizens in this country.
And that was expressly his purpose here, which I think, I mean, it's just the most revealing thing in the world. So anyway, the body cam footage of the death of Henry Novak is out. Now, we're going to play some of this. We're not going to play all of it. You can't see anything gruesome, and it's actually very easy to find the full footage. It's harrowing, obviously.
It is.
But for YouTube's terms and conditions, I don't want to play anything that I think is going to get us in trouble.
I just want to frame a bit about this. So I noticed there's two versions of this going around on Twitter at the moment. That's the shorter version. The longer version, the key difference, and actually it is an important part of it, is the police walking from their car to the house. And what's important about that exchange is the very first bit of dialogue they hear is from the father, who says, "I'm keeping him upright because his mouth keeps filling with blood." Now, that was the first thing they heard. They instantly dismissed it, pushed his head down, and they didn't consider that again, even though he then repeated with what I'm sure you're going to cover with the stuff about him being stabbed. But people have tried to say, look, it was a chaotic situation. They didn't know what they were walking into. Literally, the first sentence is "his mouth keeps filling with blood."
But we have already been ideologically primed to think,
yes,
white person, liar, racist, brown person, victim, innocent, and therefore, even that fact being presented by his father makes no impression on them.
No.
I mean, it's literally like in Chernobyl, where it's like there's graphite on the roof, and he's like, no, there is no graphite on the roof. It's literally that ideological blinker. It's like, no, there's not. It's like, well, how do you know? Because ideologically, there can't be. Ideologically, Henry Novak can't have been stabbed because he is the racist, and I'm here to arrest a racist. That's what we're at with this. Anyway, we'll watch as much of this as we think is safe.
He was on the bin on the other side of this gate.
Yeah, he's jumped over these fences and stuff like that.
And he's up here.
Move away, mate.
He's obviously... He's fallen from there and he's slipped from there.
His other shoe is left over there, mate.
What's your name, mate?
Up here.
Huh? Has anyone been hurt other than him?
Yeah, me.
He's grabbed my brother. He's took my turban off. Started grabbing my head.
Are you injured?
Yeah, I've got swollen eye, a little bruise.
All right, just step back a little bit for me. Someone flag these down.
Got this, Dad.
Right, let's get you out of there, shall we?
I was in bed asleep.
Yes,
Dad. I'll
grab
his other
arm.
Help.
Gloveless.
Come running around the corner.
What's happened to you, right? You've been stabbed. Whereabouts? I don't think you have, mate.
Right, we'll leave it there because, like I said, we don't want to go any further and possibly get into trouble. So, I mean, this is just awful, right? This is just a horrible situation. The police, you would think, would have a duty of care to at least give a damn. I mean, shortly afterwards, the woman does say, he keeps saying, "I've been stabbed and I can't breathe." And one of the Digwa family says, "No, he hasn't." And she says, "No, but we have to check, don't we?" As in, no, I believe you, but I have a procedure.
Well, clearly the white racist is performative.
Yes.
Clearly there's nothing wrong with him. You know, how could there be anything wrong with him? He's a racist. That disqualifies everything else. And, I mean, you've frozen it there, and there's better still frames.
We'll get to that in a second.
All right.
I've got
the hand.
Yeah, I've got that. So just to cover what we can't or don't want to show, just for safety's sake, he says, "I can't breathe" 9 times. And he says, "I've been stabbed 5 times, I think it was."
Right, and you heard him there beg for an ambulance.
Yeah, and "I need an ambulance." They handcuff him on the gravel where he's saying, "I can't breathe." He's not a threat. Why? He's obvious. Even if he was some drunk, violent racist at some point in the encounter, now he's clearly out of it and is clearly not a dangerous person. So why do you need to handcuff him? That's a crazy absolutely crazy approach.
Well, because he's committed the highest possible crime in Britain, which is to be a racist, apparently.
Unironically, what seems to be happening. But yeah, so the Digwa family says, well, he hasn't been stabbed, he's lying. He's like, no, but we have to check. And then the male police officer says, you're under arrest for assault, which... the woman says, he's going to be sick, I think. And then he stops responding, and he's just laying there.
Yeah.
And she's shining a light in his eyes and says his pupils aren't even reacting. And he's clearly dead at that point.
Yeah. Let's just step back a bit. They've turned up. They've got one side of the story. All they have at this point is an accusation of racism. And without even attempting to get the other side of the story,
yeah,
finding a young lad outnumbered, lying on the ground, semi-conscious, begging for help, because an accusation was made, that's enough.
Yeah.
No attempt to even hear what he has to say. I mean, they're not even listening to him when he's begging for his life, when he's begging for an ambulance and trying to tell them he's wrong. The mere fact that an accusation of racism has been made is enough. We are proceeding directly to arrest and handcuffs without even bothering to get your side of it. That's what it takes to get arrested in this country today.
And you're absolutely right about that. I mean, the police seem very callous towards Henry.
Mm.
And they seem very sympathetic towards the Digwa family. As in, when he says, I've been stabbed, I don't think you have, mate. Completely unconcerned.
Mm.
And the, oh, well, we have to check, I suppose. And they do a very, very weak, cursory check, slightly lifting up his shirt and things like that. It's like, okay, but you're not actually examining him properly. And he keeps him left laid on his side, face sort of facing downwards, so you can't see if there's any blood on his chest. You're not doing an actual check.
Mm.
But the thing which is, like you said, most evident, is he's been very, very dismissive to what he perceives to be a white English boy, but is very respectful to the Sikhs and taking their word for it. Take their word for everything. And then, as you say, you get this image that came out of it. And this is just genuinely awful, right? This is a genuinely harrowing picture. And it is so symbolically powerful that it is, of course, at the moment going viral. What we have is a young lad who, for racial reasons, has been stabbed by a foreign man. And now he is dying after being dragged across the gravel, bleeding out, mouth full of blood, lungs full of blood, can't breathe, is losing consciousness, hands pale in the light.
They are ghostly.
Absolutely ghostly. Where the dismissive agents of the state, with their blue-gloved hands, arrest him and handcuff him as he dies in front of them.
I mean, again, some people are trying to provide some sort of justification for the police action. I will quickly note that by far the most scathing responses to this that I have seen are all coming from retired police officers. People who got out of the force at least 10 years ago, but especially they got out of the force 20 or 30 years ago, they are the most scathing of what they have seen because they understand how ridiculous the action here. But, I mean, all the clues that the police just didn't want to interact with. One, they are immediately told his mouth keeps filling with blood and they treat him like he's drunk. I've been drunk many times. My mouth has never filled with blood on those occasions. Two, he's begging for an ambulance. Three, he's telling them he's been stabbed. Four, he's barely coherent. You can even hear, if you watch the whole video, you can hear a sort of gurgling effect and a rasping effect as he's desperately trying to breathe because his lungs can't inflate because they've been stabbed through. There are so many indications in this that you should at least pause and consider what you're looking at, but it's no. An accusation of racism has been made. We need to know nothing else. If we are presented with any conflicting evidence, we will ignore it. We will proceed directly to arrest because the police are basically the paramilitary wing of the Guardian newspaper.
And this is exactly correct in the framing of reality versus ideology. Again, going back to the Chernobyl, there is no graphite on the roof example. All of those points are manifestly clear when you're looking at this. If you knew nothing about the situation and you stumbled on the Digwa family leaning over this lad, younger lad, who is just insensible on the floor saying, I've been stabbed, you wouldn't in any way think, okay, he's the perpetrator and these people are the victims. And even if he'd done something to initiate the conflict, in that moment, you'd be like, this person needs help. He clearly needs some sort of assistance. He's saying he's stabbed, he's begging for an ambulance. I think I would call the ambulance. It's only through the prism of ideology and being having this as an ideologically loaded situation that the police have come into, and they know they've got innocent browns they have to protect and villainous whites that they have to arrest, that this is possible. It's only through that lens. But what I really want to talk about here is this as a symbolic representation of the British state, right? Look at everything about this. You've got the police officer, the woman's hand is clawed because she has fake nails on, right?
Yes, yes.
She is exactly a product of modernity. This weird sort of artificial, like, beauty products that
you're
women
got. Right. It's demonic, isn't it?
It's genuinely demonic, but it's also, there's a kind of hollowness that underpins it. Because the problem with the modern state and modern society generally is this weird disconnected vanity. Right. No man has ever been like, you know what, if my woman doesn't have these weird claws artificially on her fingers, she's less attractive. This is entirely vain. And it's like, okay, if you were working in Tesco's or something, I might understand it. But how are police officers allowed to have these vanity attachments? Like, you have a practical job that is essentially purely utilitarian in its execution. Why are you allowed to have all of these fanciful extensions on yourself? Like, it's one of those professions where you have to sacrifice to be able to do the profession properly. And in this, the British managerial state, we see they don't care about that. None of that matters. No, she's fine. She's fine to have her weird clawed hands because we don't care that she is obviously not fit for her job. We don't care about that. We don't care about the man either being not fit for his job. And then you've got the next thing, which is obviously the dying white man on the floor being arrested. So you can see the machinery locking around his pale hand and wrist as he dies. Completely helpless. Utterly unsympathetic.
I mean, at the level of the metaphor of a nation, you will be held down and restricted while you die.
Yes.
I mean, that goes for the country of Britain as a whole.
It's literally the policy of the British government against the British people, right? So you've got the completely clinical state that is just being the thing that finally makes sure that you shuffle off, right?
And they've got the blue gloves on, of course.
Blue gloves. Yeah, that's the next thing I want to talk about. The fact that the blue gloves, that is protection for the police. Again, like the vanity of the fake nails, the police have protection from you. You are an untouchable.
Yes.
Like, we don't even have to touch you, as if you were the lowest caste in India or something. Mm. You know, touching you infects us in some way, and therefore you get laid on the ground where the clinical state treats you like you are the problem, like you're a burden, you get locked up, and eventually you die. And, I mean, that is just, I mean, and this is while your foreign killers mock, laugh, and lie about you, and they take them at their word, despite what is directly in front of their eyes.
And with the blue gloves, even if that incredibly cursory medical check that they did, which was unbelievably cursory, but even if they did happen to touch a bit of blood because of the gloves, unless they then looked at the underside of the gloves, they wouldn't have noticed the wet blood.
Yeah. And so this image has become very symbolic, I think, of the genuine, the tragedy of modernity playing out in front of us. Everything that is wrong with our society is present in this image and in this situation. So just awful to think about. Anyway, so this has caused a widespread amount of, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, I guess outrage is just the best way to describe it.
I think my personal state is closer to despair.
Yeah, there's something in it that isn't just outrage, because outrage implies that there is a solution, right? Mm. That you, if you are outraged against the clinical state that is replacing you and watching you die, then it has an obligation to respond and actually address your issues. But like you say, like, it's more like despair, because we know they won't.
Yeah.
We know they will do nothing. And in fact, we'll get to how they're going to do nothing.
I mean, there is a solution, but it cannot come from any of the establishment.
Correct. Any of them. Mm. Anyway, so Digger was convicted for 20 years and 190 days.
Which is below the statutory minimum.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually been referred to Lord Hermer as to why this was such a lenient
friend of the British natives, Lord Hermer.
Never have we had a more implacable enemy than Lord Hermer. So I can't imagine, if he does change this, it will only be because of the fear of the outrage and anything that might happen because of the British public.
Let's just think about that for a moment. So this guy, what is he, like 22, 24, something like that?
23.
23, okay. If he serves his 21 years in jail...
He'll be younger than us.
He will be younger than we are now when he gets out. And from my perspective, and I'm sure you feel the same way, I've got plenty of living left to do.
Yeah, I intend to.
So he will get out when he's younger than we are now and will have that rest of his life ahead of him.
Yep.
Henry isn't coming back.
I mean, he could conceivably have another sort of 50 years ahead of him.
Yes.
But Henry's gone forever, and yes. Henry was only 18. During the trial... When being sentenced, as you can see, the BBC said a verbal altercation broke out in the court. Vox Populi are in the court. They have reporters there. What actually happened is that Digger's family shouted racist at the judge when Digger was sentenced.
Well, thing is, they believe, and for very, very good reason, but there are a series of magic words.
Yes.
And when they've successfully used these magic words. The police call was a series of, we're going to use the magic words now. And the outburst in court is a sort of disbelief that for some reason the magic word has stopped working. So they summon it up one last time, a big hefty shout at the judge at sentencing, racist, as if that will fix everything. And to their surprise... The magic word isn't working.
Yeah, like a talisman or something that's being used as a ward to protect or to invoke. And you're exactly right. They've tried to invoke it and it just hasn't worked.
I mean, it did work at first.
It did.
But they overused it.
Yes. There was a statement from Novak's father that I wanted to watch.
The police were told by our son himself and by a member of the public who called 999 that they heard someone shout that they had been stabbed. But the police did not believe them. Henry was pulled across the gravel, his hands forced behind his back, and he was placed in handcuffs. Instead of being treated as a dying victim, police formally arrested Henry for assault and read him his rights. That was the last thing he heard. Henry did not die with dignity. He did not die with the care he deserved. He lost consciousness before anyone believed him. Let me be absolutely clear. We hold Vikram Digger solely and 100% responsible for the brutal murder of our son. But Henry should not have died on the streets of Southampton in police custody. The way he was treated was inhumane and degrading. His murderer, however, was afforded decency. He was believed. He was not handcuffed when arrested. He was not handcuffed when transported to the police station. As far as we understand, he was never handcuffed at all. And, as Vikram Digger himself told the court, whilst under arrest for Henry's murder, police even took him to the kitchen so he could choose his food. The contrast is unbearable. We believe the officers involved remain on duty, although we understand some may have since resigned.
That line for me, the contrast is unbearable, is the thing that really jumped out at me here. Because what he's saying is, I recognize this is a two-tier society. That's what he's saying. I mean,
it's so obvious to absolutely everybody, and even today, the British government is still trying to insist that there is no two-tier treatment.
We'll get onto that. We'll get onto that. I'm well impressed at the dad for keeping it together.
Yeah.
There was a statement from Digwa's family as well. The loss of a young life is a grief that no family should ever have to carry. We are deeply sorry for the pain and suffering the Novak's family has had to endure. We love Vikram. We will continue to love him. This love does not stand in opposition to the sorrow we feel for the Novak family. Both are real and both remain with us for the rest of our lives. We would give anything to turn back time so the path of both Henry and Vikram never crossed that night. We cannot change what has happened. We just hope there's no further pain caused in its name. We apologise to the Sikh community for our son's actions, which have unfairly brought the community into disrepute. We ask that the tragedy is not used by anyone to inflame division or hostility towards any community. And now we ask for privacy. Well, you weren't asking for privacy when you were screeching racist at the judge, were you?
No. I mean, primarily, this is an apology to fellow Sikhs to say, yeah, we kind of blew it.
Yes, but also, we're not going to disavow our own son. Now, yeah. Saying we would give anything to turn back time so both the path of Henry and Vikram never crossed. Well, honestly, it seems that that would have just...
It just would have delayed...
Delayed the inevitable.
Another murder.
Because Vikram Digwa seems to have been a psycho who had previously threatened others with a knife, and as we'll see in a minute, new convictions have been levelled against him because of accounts of possessing an offensive weapon in a private place previously. His father has now got 6 counts of possession of an offensive weapon in a private place. His brother has 6 counts of possession of an offensive weapon in various different dates and places. So this is not an isolated incident. And Vikram Digwa had been previously banned from a Sikh temple due to his bad behavior. So yeah. It seems that he was just off the rails. And so he probably would have encountered someone else, started a fight with them, and stabbed them anyway. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he was free and on the streets...
Well, I don't know if you got it. Have you got that photo of him at work?
I don't, actually, no.
There's this extraordinary photo of him. He was apparently a trainee accountant or something. Yeah. And they've got a group photo of the set of accountants all stood together. And he's there conspicuously with a harness around his neck with this huge dagger. I mean, it's merely more of a small sword. Mm. But I mean, he had this religious liberty and he took it to the maximum.
Yes.
And look, if I joined, if you know, some any young lad had joined an accountancy firm and tried to wear a cavalry sabre or something, I mean, nobody would let that pass.
And you'd ask, what's going on here? And there was a video that we showed on a previous podcast of him threatening someone with a sword.
Like, yeah.
And his family had to, you know, get him to, you know, push him away from taking action. So this guy was clearly someone who was quite aggressive. And it seems that this would have happened at some point. Yeah. So, okay. So the question I want to ask is, well, how did this happen? Well, it's because police are instructed to be anti-racist. Now, this is the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary's Race Action Plan of 2024 to 2026. They have a clear commitment to nurture an ethical and inclusive culture. And an ethical and inclusive culture means being anti-racist. As they say, the murder of George Floyd by serving police officers in America in 2020 was a pivotal moment for policing in the UK, driving the need for real change. Just to be clear, George Floyd was not murdered, right? Before this podcast, I went and reread George Floyd's autopsy just to make sure I wasn't incorrect. And what I found is the statement by the person doing the autopsy, I can't remember the name of the chap, and that was a summary of it. And in there they say, oh yeah, he was definitely killed, but he did have high levels of drugs in his system. And if you look at the toxicology report...
I think the phrasing they use is a fatal level.
I don't think he says exactly that, but he still attributes it to murder, even though he's got 11 nanograms of fentanyl in his bloodstream, which is a lethal dose, is somewhere over 0.7 nanograms or something like that. So
about 11 times or
something like that. It's a, you know, potentially quite high. But he's got a series of other drugs as well, illegal drugs.
Right.
And so he's got this crazy cocktail of drugs, and yet, oh, it was a murder. It's like, I don't think it was. Anyway, so whilst this tragic event happened in another country, policing across the UK has, for many years, had a strained relationship with some communities. And so nationally, the Police Race Action Plan was created to address racial disparities and distrust associated with policing, particularly from those from our black communities. So what does that mean? Well, that means our commitments and commitment zero, number one was, quote, zero tolerance of racism and ensuring Hampshire and Isle of Wight constabulary is anti-racist in all it does. Now, what does that mean? That is left-wing decolonial ideology. That is left-wing intersectional ideology that stipulates in every circumstance the non-white person is structurally disadvantaged, systemically oppressed, and all white people benefit from this oppression. And that means in every circumstance, even if the non-white person appears to be the aggressor, there is something about the system that means they are the victim of circumstances, and even if the white people seems to be the victim, there is something about the system that means in all circumstances, the white person was actually the aggressor. That is the framework that, quote, anti-racist means and invokes and informs, as it says, all it does.
Yes.
That's why this is an expressly anti-white police system that was instantiated in Hampshire. So that's why it looked like this in Southampton.
Just to underline just how far this goes, I've got an anecdote that sort of nails this. So my father was a police officer, and he ultimately left to go into business. But nevertheless, I grew up knowing a lot of guys in the police and some of their sons, people I've known for a long time, then went into the police. So I know a decent number of police officers. And one guy I'm thinking of, he started off in Sussex Police, but he did actually move over to this, Hampshire, Isle of Wight. This anecdote just completely nails how bad the police are, okay? So he was going for, not exactly a promotion, he was going for a specialist team within Hampshire Constabulary. And it was a specialist role, and so you had to kind of do these three exams, and that was their way of vetting candidates. Two of the first two exams were competency for the job. The third exam was diversity, equity, inclusion. And I was chatting to this guy before he took these exams when he told me he was going for the job. And he told me that what he was going to do was he was not going to revise for the first two exams. He was only going to revise for a third one. And I was like, that doesn't seem like a good idea. And he was like, no, trust me, I know the police. I know how the police actually work. You don't. And I said, yeah, and I was arguing with him at the time. I was saying, surely you should do something for them. And he's like, no, in fact, if anything, I'm going to deliberately screw them up. And that's what he did. He went into these exams. He deliberately flunked the first two of these exams. And the third one, which he'd actually prepared for, he nailed it. So the results come back. 12 candidates had gone for this specialised role. He scored 12 out of 12 for the first two exams and first out of 12 for the third exam, diversity, equity, inclusion. Who do you think they gave the job to?
Some minority.
No, they gave it to him.
Right, okay.
I don't believe there were actually any minorities.
Well, it's Hampshire, so probably.
Yeah. So clearly, the word has come down in Hampshire Police and probably all police forces, that you always hire the guy who can demonstrate the highest conviction to diversity, equity, inclusion.
The most ideologically compliant.
Yes. Yeah. So, and he had deliberately flunked because, and it, the way he described it to me is he was proving a point to himself.
Yes.
Rather than making any statement, because he didn't know that years later I would end up on a podcast and could relay this. But he was proving a point to himself. This is how the police operate. Now, this was a low rank, it was a specialist role, but it was a low rank one. Obviously, all leadership roles in the police are promoted on the same way.
Yes.
They hire, they promote solely on the basis of your adherence to diversity, equity, inclusion. And that's probably why all senior police officers look like lesbians, even the male ones.
Yeah, and it's not just the police either. Remember the RAF complaining that
yes,
you only get useless white men. This, the institutions of Britain are essentially Soviet in the yes, way that they recruit from whoever for ideological conformity,
yes,
rather than competency. I mean, this in the Soviet Union, again, going back to Chernobyl as the sort of representation of this, this is why you have like teachers and, you know, bin men and whatever,
yeah,
being party apparatchiks, because they are prepared to adhere to the party ideology in the face of reality. And that's what they
want. And that is exactly what the police are. So my point is, the police cannot be reformed. The entire senior leadership cadre is there purely because of its adherence to diversity, equity, inclusion,
yes,
okay, and all of that stuff. So it's not like a new government can come in and just make a few reforms. The entire police apparatus, at least everybody above the rank of sergeant needs to go, and probably a large minority of those below the rank of sergeant as well. You need to start again with the police because they are purely an ideological paramilitary wing of the Guardian newspaper. They are not a police force. They're completely different to the police force that the same my father served in or any retired officer.
And the constant memes that are made, you know, the doe-eyed white girl and the cruel-eyed Muslim woman standing at the door saying, oh, you said a racism online or something. Yeah. That's what the police are now.
I had to break that meme out recently because that guy that we just saw, Henry's father, you know, because people are saying, okay, the video does look bad, but they were confused. Well, as we clearly demonstrated, there was enough in there for them not to be confused.
I don't accept it, yeah.
But even if we were going to accept that line of argument, afterwards they took Henry's phone and they searched it for racism. And then when they went to inform Henry's father that his son had just been killed, it was also, oh, and by the way, we're taking your phone to search for racism. The clear implication being that if they had found any sort of hereditary racism in this family, then it would have been a good kill.
It would have been exculpatory.
Yes.
Exactly. It would have been a good kill. It wouldn't have been a problem. And this problem is persistent throughout all of the police forces. And it forces the police forces to be the protectors of minorities and minority ideology and religion. So we've got an example from yesterday where South Wales Constabulary were essentially told to protect Islam. They were ordered to record any instances of hostility towards Muslims or anything they felt went beyond legitimate, quote-unquote, discussions of Islam. Now, a legitimate discussion of Islam from this standard must be in some
way praiseworthy.
Praiseworthy, confirmatory. Mm. Criticism is obviously what they're talking about here. And so the state and its repressive state apparatuses are being geared not towards preventing crime or solving crime or keeping order, but instead protecting minority groups and their ideologies from the native majority population.
Yeah.
This is the two-tier system at work and being revealed to us through the murder of Henry Novak.
Yes. Special treatment towards minorities. I mean, another smaller anecdote. This is from another friend I know in the police. But when he was going through his training, that was when I first found out that Sikhs could carry daggers. Yeah. He told me about it then. And another thing that always stuck in my mind is he was told that if he knocks on a Muslim household, and clearly they're an observant Muslim family, and the wife comes to the door, he was instructed to basically ignore her entirely, other than to ask if the man of the house was home. And that is not the British way. You know, this is the extent to which the police are pushed on this.
Just before we came in to record this, I didn't have time to add it, but I saw Chris Philp in Parliament saying that the police had express instructions handed down from the Commission on Policing or whoever it was, College of Policing, to treat different races differently.
Yes,
and so
yeah, they very much are.
This is very clearly a part of the policing in this country.
Yep.
And this attitude goes everywhere. I mean, the judge, when sentencing Digwa, condemned him for stirring up racial tensions, as if this is the real problem.
Yes.
Now,
well, it is, from his point of view.
Exactly. From the system's point of view, this is the problem. Yeah. How you have caused a problem that is triggering a hostile response from the native white British community that we are here to protect you from. And so you are in some way a traitor to the system that privileges you.
Yes.
Is the condemnation here. There's also another quote from the judge that I saw from Vox Populi. Quote, speaking in Punjab, you confessed to stabbing him 3 times. You lied in your statement. Your further statement you modified added more lies. The jury rejects your defense, so do I. You have brought shame to your family and community. You have increased racial tension. Right. Now, again, like I said on the podcast the other day, this, you lied to us, right? There was an implicit pact between the state and the minority. We will protect you and you will protect us. And your lies have left us exposed. Yeah. They have an attack on us now that has made us vulnerable. And so I'm angry at you for hurting us when we trusted you.
You have to wonder how much of the 21 years is for that and how much is for the murder.
You really do. And the highest crime of increasing racial tension, again, bringing shame to your family and your community, as if it's the British state's job to protect the dignity,
pride of
the minorities. Of the minorities. But the thing about the increasing racial tension, well, what does that mean? Well, the multicultural state wants everything to be frictionless. It doesn't want any of the minority communities to have tensions, and almost all of their mind, all of their bandwidth goes towards making sure that the Hindus aren't at war with the Muslims, and the Muslims aren't at war with the Jews aren't at war with whoever, like, and the Sikhs and this. They want nothing but Sadiq Khan, happy clappy, multicultural inclusion. They don't want contradictions. They don't want friction. And that's Digwa's crime to them as well. He increased racial tension. And that allows the Sikh community to say, well, hang on a second, we're being demonized after the murder. We are the real victims of this. And I think it's worth addressing this, right? Because I see a lot of people attacking the Sikh community, and I feel that it's a bit of a red herring in a way, right? So there are only 500,000 Sikhs living in Britain. That's not very many, right?
I mean, even in India, they're only 2% of the 1.7% of the population.
Exactly.
So they are very much a minority of Indians. So
exactly. There's only something 24 million of them. And I don't think this was a structural, systemic problem within the Sikh community, right? I actually do think that Digwa was himself a bit of a maniac, and the family, having a very high familial preference, clan preference, which is obviously true, went out of their way to lie and to protect him, to try and invoke the mechanisms of the state. But I don't think the Sikh population is actually the problem that is being manifested here.
No. Well, I mean, let's clear up what the issue is. I mean, I don't want anyone to misconstrue what I'm saying here, but there are certain peoples who the British generally have excellent relationships with.
Yes.
And of the non-European races, it's basically the Gurkhas and the Sikhs.
Yes.
Those are the two that we have a long history of military cooperation with. If the British Empire in India, a lot of the reason why they're able to do what they did is because the Sikhs basically formed a lot of our elite native units. There was one war between us, but basically the Sikh generals, Lay and Tej, whatever his name was.
Yeah, but after we won that, they basically joined us.
Yeah, well, a lot of Sikhs will say that their own generals betrayed their own armies because they found the idea of not being under British rule so inconceivable that they kind of betrayed their own armies. Generally, Sikhs are well-behaved. And I'd say, along with the Gurkhas, they're probably the best of the non-European immigrants. That's not the point. The point is that all of the non-native groups rank higher than the natives.
Yeah.
All of them get preferential treatment to the natives.
Yes. And that's exactly the point I wanted to talk about. This is a structural issue in Britain, right? That minorities are given preferences and privileges, while the white majority are being oppressed by the state. And so this person, while I do actually agree with him that I don't think the Sikh community is more widely to blame, they are still a beneficiary of these privileges.
Yes.
And so when these privileges are laid so nakedly,
yes,
in front of everyone, people react understandably, say, well, the entire community is in some way separated and advanced over me and my community. And I mean, like I said, the Sikhs are by far from the worst of this. I mean, the Muslim community is way worse for this playing victim.
And I will say, in the Sikhs' benefit, I've seen a number of them come out and express condemnation with this.
Yep.
And I've seen more of that than I have in the last 30 years from Muslims. I never see them coming out after the most horrific terrorist incident. I never see them coming out to condemn it. And they are at least doing that.
Yes, and so, quite a few, actually.
Yes.
And so this is why I'm not personally angry at the Sikh community. And I think the view that, okay, these guys have proven to be the problem is actually a bit misguided. If I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I want millions of Sikhs here or anything like that. I'm not saying that Digwa's family shouldn't be deported. Of course,
and we're not even saying that what we are proposing is the reform solution, where you go to Gordon Denton, and you put half of your efforts into trying to recruit 300 Sikhs, and then finding that actually only 15% of them voted for you anyway.
Yeah,
it's not that. All we're saying is in the whole stack of immigrants in this country, they're actually one of the better ones.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter. The point is that all of them sit above the natives.
But moreover, Sikh religion doesn't inform or validate the behaviour of Digwa. Now, in the case of, say, grooming gangs, which we're going to get onto in a little bit, and the propensity of that community to close ranks and never disavow the guilty in that community, and to have a widespread connection with the gangs in the community. Well, the Sikhs are not like that.
Right? No.
Sikh religion doesn't inform this. And so, like I said, I'm not trying to be, you know, defender of the Sikhs or anything. But
well, after young white British girls, it was Sikh girls.
Yes.
Targeted by the grooming gangs.
Yeah.
And the reason that stopped is because the Sikh community was allowed to push back.
Yes. And I've actually got an anecdote in here as well. I was in a pub a couple of years ago after a protest, and I ended up talking to this Canadian guy who told me that a few years earlier...
Well, they have had some Sikh problems.
Well, he was in Britain, right? And he and a female friend had gone out and gotten drunk, and they were walking home. I think it was in Bradford or somewhere like that. And they walked down the wrong street. And they were walking down the street and they realized that there were people who were coming to the doors and opening these doors. And they realized they were in a Muslim area. They got to the end of this road and a group of Sikhs came and surrounded them and escorted them out. Now, like I said, like, I'm not here saying we need infinite numbers of Sikhs or anything, but I do think the Sikhs generally are much more sympathetic towards the native British people than many of our other Muslim... immigrant groups.
Bit of a Freudian slip there, Cole.
Bit of a Freudian slip. And I, as you say, I have seen many members of the prominent leaders in the Sikh community who have come out and condemned this. So I personally don't want to go attacking Sikhs over this. Yeah. Even if they have a more clannish familial structure which caused Digwa and his family to clan together and try and take advantage of the system, I don't think that it is necessarily that all Sikhs are opposed to the British people in the way that other communities are.
No.
So
In fact, Sikhs are, if you've ever had a conversation with one, they go a lot further than we do.
Yeah, they understand the problems.
When it comes to Islam.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
To put it very mildly, they go a lot further than we do.
Yeah. Most Sikhs don't seem to take advantage of the structural privileges that they're given in the face of other communities that actually do, and I'm tired of it.
No, they work, for example.
Yeah.
Like I say, they are, along with the Gurkhas, the best of the non-European groups. Fact is, though, when push came to shove, they still knew knew what magic words they had to enchant. They instinctively knew that no matter which group they're from, they automatically rank higher than the native British.
I'm glad you've mentioned that, because Ahmed Yacoub has come out and made a point. Now, he's got music on in the background that I don't want to play, but he says he's completely in favour, he's completely in defence of the Sikh community. We as Muslims get targeted every time a Muslim makes a mistake. Sikhism hasn't advised him to commit that crime. Okay. But Islam is not the same as Sikhism.
No.
And the problem in the Muslim community is much more widespread, and we don't get the reaction.
It's doctrinal, for a start.
Exactly. And we don't get the reaction from the Muslim community that we've had from the Sikh community about what has happened here. But why is Ahmed Yacoub doing this? Well, he understands that actually this is an ethnic privilege. And his co-ethnics, you're from the subcontinent as well, well then I'm on your side against the white British, because we both share a privilege. In our absence, these people wage wars against each other. Sikhism was founded to oppose Islam.
Yes.
So it's not like these people are doctrinally on the same team, but they are ethnically on the same team.
But let's say, for example, we decide, as I think we should, that the kirpan can no longer be worn.
Sure.
Or if it is, it has to be welded into the scabbard or something like
that. Well, there's actually a get-around. So there's a little sort of necklace that they wear that has a very tiny kirpan embedded in it, which religiously satisfies the demand.
And actually, most Sikhs you meet, they don't even bother with that or the bangle or anything else. And they cut their hair, a whole bunch of different things. But you're right. What he's doing is he realizing is that even though the kirpan means nothing to him as a Muslim, if any part,
he would view them as pagans.
Yes, and as you say, they would be killing each other without the white man there to prevent it. He recognizes that if any part of the system of privileges over and above the natives gets chipped away, well, his privileges might get chipped away.
Correct.
So he's going to defend the kirpan, even though it means nothing to him, even though he thinks it's ridiculous, and even though he would go to war with the Sikhs in the absence of the native British being here for as long as we are. He can't afford to let any part of it get chipped away.
Exactly. He is appealing to the multicultural system that gives him the same ethnic privileges over us that it gives to the Sikh community and any other foreign community as well. Anyway, so let's go on to Keir Starmer's response, because this is just remarkable. You'll remember in 2024 when Axel Rudakabana stabbed 8 children, killing 3. And everyone said, right, well, this is a clear example of the two-tier policing of the country. Keir Starmer came out and said, quote, two-tier policing worries are a non-issue. That doesn't mean they don't exist. That just means they're a non-issue. He denied Farage's claim at the time and insisted policing was carried out without fear or favour. Well, that's a narrative that's been entirely blown up by the Henry Novak case.
There's no way that you can make that argument post-
Post Rudakabana wasn't persuasive anyway, but it's certainly not now.
And I'll be doing a segment on this on the podcast tomorrow about the McPherson inquiry. But it's very clear in that that the British state had to recognise itself as a racist for everything that it did, and it had to spend forever apologising for that fact. I mean, it's a non-argument, Keir. You can't possibly make this argument.
Yeah, it's literally like saying, there's no graphite on the roof. This is completely ideological. No, policing is carried out without fear or favour, and yet here we are again, 2 years later. They reiterated it again today. Number 10 said there is no such thing as two-tier policing. You can keep saying it. I mean, Shabana Mahmood stood up in Parliament today where there have been accusations of two-tier policing and says, of course, we police without fear or favour. That's not true. We have your own anti-racist police documents that tell us we're here to instantiate an anti-racist form of policing, which means discriminating in favour of ethnic minorities against the native white British. And so this is just a wholly unpersuasive narrative, but also shows the wholly ideological nature of the current government. Completely blinkered. It doesn't matter what happens to them. They have the line and they're going to keep repeating it. So completely mad. And in fact, to reinforce that this is a two-tier system where certain ethnic groups have privileges above the majority white native population, Labour have finally found a kind of knife that they don't want to ban. Labour have banned dozens of different kinds of knives. Ninja swords, zombie knives.
It's not just that. I tried to buy some steak knives from Tesco
the other day,
and I couldn't because I didn't have any ID on me.
You haven't got your license for the steak knives. But apparently they won't be banning Sikh ceremonial knives of course, this is an ethnic privilege that one group
has. They took away our handguns, was it 30, 40 years ago?
Because of the actions
of one man in Dunblane.
For the Sikhs?
Yeah. Well, but he not British, so therefore different rules apply.
Which is literally the case. I mean, there's no other way of describing this other than a two-tier system that privileges one ethno-religion over the native population. There's no other way to describe it.
Well, it's explicit. It privileges all ethnicities over the British.
Well, yes, but this particular case is this particular one, but as you say. And you can see that this is something they have been really dragged to the podium about.
Oh, it's only because of an intervention of Lindsay Hoyle, the Speaker of the House of Commons, that they're doing this at all.
Exactly. They were silent for the first few days, and it's because Lindsay Hoyle made them. And so Keir Starmer's made a statement. This is an awful, shocking case. Henry's loved ones have gone through the trauma of a long trial and endured Henry's killer, making up appalling claims about their son, who was thoughtful, kind, and deeply loved. It is right that IPOC is investigating the police's response to this senseless murder, and we must end the cycle of tragedy by tackling the horror of knife crime.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is classic Keir Starmer. First of all, he goes straight to procedure.
Yeah.
It's the right thing that the IOPC is investigating. Yep. Straight away, this is the procedure, this is the rule set that is going to be followed. This is how the man thinks about literally everything. And then immediately, it's pivot to his pet issue, knife crime.
But also notice that in the moment where Digwa stabbed Novak, he and his family were aware that they had a racial privilege. So him targeting a white man is a racialized event. No matter what happens, he thinks the law is on my side. The state is on my side. They will protect me. They won't protect the white guy. Mm. So he knows, and they responded exactly as you would expect if they think that that's the case. So he probably, there's no way of getting around this being a racialized murder, right?
Yes.
And so Keir Starmer, instead of speaking about Digwa and his family personally, he's like, no, this is just the abstract category of knife crime.
Yeah.
This is the same as any other knife crime, as if the two urban youths from the inner city stab each other on the street. This is exactly the same. He's like, no, it's not. There is a different dimension to this. You cannot just abstract this into the broader category of knife crime, because something specific happened here that revealed the nature of the system. And as you say, go straight to proceduralism. And okay, well, let's tackle the horror of knife crime by banning the knives then. Like, that's your normal response to this. I can't carry a knife. I can't even carry a Stanley knife if I'm walking around, if I'm, you know, going over to my neighbor's house to help him fix his shed or something. I can't carry that Stanley knife without, if the police caught me, I'd be in trouble.
There are some versions that I believe you can, but they tend to, small. And
I'd be taking a risk, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, okay, you're not even going to try and do that. It's actually mad. But compare this statement to his outrage when a minority community is attacked. Well, let's have a look at the Golders Green one.
Well,
this anti-Semitic attack in Golders Green is utterly appalling. Attacks on our Jewish community are attacks on Britain. Thank you to the ambulance services and police for helping those responsible brought justice.
Yeah. So three unofficial Jewish ambulances were torched. Nobody died. Nobody was hurt. And I think they arrested some Pakistanis in the end or something like that, whatever it was. I mean, noticeable things there. He doesn't go to procedure.
No.
This is moral zeal and, you know, brimfire that he's coming out with here. And also, he did not need to be forced to make these statements.
Oh, no, he was...
So he tweeted four times about this, two of them on the day that the news broke, and then twice more in the weeks that followed. Mm-hmm. You know, he was full of zeal. He didn't need to be forced. You know, an attack on a Jewish ambulance... It was top of the news cycle for days. And we would not even know about Henry Novak if it wasn't for Twitter. If it wasn't for Elon Musk spending $44 billion to preserve free speech in the free world, we wouldn't know about any of this, because the news hasn't covered it. Politicians didn't want to talk about it. It's only in the last few days when people on Twitter would simply not shut up about it. As far as I know.
And not just that. It's people like Vox Populi, the alternative media, going to the cases and doing the reporting and getting the word out there.
I actually think I was one of the first people to make a video on the Henry Novak thing. I did it on the morning that the original news broke. I think I'm one of the first to do this. But I mean, loads of people have just not shut up about this case and forced the mainstream media to cover it and forced politicians to have to address it. But if it wasn't for Twitter, if it wasn't for Elon Musk, none of us would even learn of this case.
Absolutely. And I want to specifically look at Keir Starmer's statement here. Mm. So the anti-Semitic attack, he's saying this is a racial attack that is, as you said earlier, the highest form of crime in Britain. Mm. So he's immediately characterising this as the worst kind of crime in Britain. And attacks on our Jewish community are attacks on Britain itself. An attack on a white lad is not an attack on Britain.
No.
It is not a racialized attack. It is
just generic knife crime.
It's just abstract generic knife crime that can be proceduralized away so that we don't need to ban the knife. We don't need to do anything. Nothing structurally about the system needs to change, because this is actually the system working as intended.
Yep.
Otherwise, we would have to change something. And so you can see the difference. It's genuinely night and day. And as you say, you know, oh, the anti-Semitic arson attacks in Gaul is green and horrifying. I've been in touch with Jewish community leaders. This attack on Jewish community is an attack on us all. Nothing of the sort.
There's no procedure in there. There's no deflection. It's just absolute
full
passion.
Full-throated. He truly believes it. Because as far as he is concerned, the British state exists to protect minorities and not the English majority. That's what he believes, the white British majority. And again, he goes up, he's going to go after Zach Polanski for not being as hard on this as he should have been. How dare he, Zach? Don't you understand that this was a Jewish ambulance and you're Jewish? It's like, oh my God, okay. So, Sadiq Khan, just as a quick thing, obviously he said nothing. He's got a lot to say about the death of George Floyd back in 2020.
Well, he has been busy lately because he went out to...
He went on the Hajj, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, we've got that in a second. But as you can see, you know, he said this in 2020, back when he used to leave his comments open. He's posted nothing about Henry Novak. He did post about Gypsy Month, though.
Right.
This month marks Gypsy, Roma and Traveller History Month. Facing discrimination in many areas of life, our Gypsy, Roma and Traveller communities have long contributed to life in our capital, and today we celebrate their rich legacy.
Where would we be without our Gypsies?
I mean, what is that legacy, just out of interest?
Yeah.
But yeah, the difference is night and day. He's not going to mention it because it was a white person,
yep,
and he has minorities to advance.
Well, now, white lives don't matter.
Literally. But the irony of all this, of course, is this is Sadiq Khan in his forward-facing, ultra-progressive, managerial liberalism perspective. But in his private life, he goes to the Hajj, and he stands there saying the Hajj is the most important thing, and the second he gets back, he's back into managerial liberalism. As in, he knows what oppresses you, and he knows what he actually morally needs to do. He needs to go and kiss the black stone in Mecca, but for you, I'm going to enforce the privileges of minorities over your community. And so five pillars here being like, well, he's just come back from the Hajj. How can he be promoting LGBTQI? It's because this isn't for him.
This is
a method of keeping you down.
He's not promoting LGBTQI plus in
Mecca.
In Mecca.
Yeah. No, not
yeah. He's not promoting it for his people. He's promoting it for our people.
Yes.
Because it's a useful way of getting our birth rate down, which will hasten the takeover of the British nation.
Yeah. And so I want to just end very briefly here. Well, not end, but get to the next point with Nigel Farage. So Nigel Farage actually came out quite strongly on this, which is, it's nice to see Nigel Farage finally being dragged to the right on an issue.
It took a lot to drag him there, but...
God, it really did. Our institutions don't care about Henry Novak because he's white. That's completely true.
Yep.
But you are always a day late and a step to the left behind the curve. You had to be dragged to this point, and it's very frustrating. But at least you're there. At least you're finally there on this.
Yeah.
But another video today, saying that this Britain's historic way of life has been thrown away. Now, this is really interesting because in this video, for the sake of time, I won't play it, but it's easy to find, obviously. He's abstracting away from the events and people themselves and into the systems and institutions. He says the problem with this is that it puts the traditional way of life that we have, but also the rule of law and all that sort of thing, that is what we are actually trying to serve here. That's the thing in danger. The historic way of life is in the institutions, the procedures, that's all being thrown away. It's like, don't get me wrong, I'm not in favor of throwing away our traditional way of life. But if we didn't have that, it's still us that's important, right? Like, go back 500 years and we didn't have that, but we were still the English, the Scottish, the Welsh, and our lives and communities were still important, right? The historic way of life, the institutions of the British Empire that still pervade this country, that still persist over this country, are not more important than the people themselves.
It's the eternal problem of the civic nationalist. The civic nationalist, if you force them to choose between losing the institutions of this country or the people of this country, they would always want to preserve the institutions. And in the civic nationalist mindset, if the population became 99% Somalian but
think
still had the set of institutions named as they are, that would be a preservation of British.
In fact, I thought I had he put out a 5-minute statement, but I got the 47 second statement. So we will watch this. I want to make this point.
The biggest fear a police officer now has going about his or her duty on the street is the fear of being reported for having acted in a way that was racially biased. That fear, now greater than dealing with a dying man living on the ground. Henry's family have responded to this in just the most extraordinarily dignified way. But I suggest the rest of us respond to this with pure, cold rage. This is wrong. All the values and standards of living in a free country where everybody is judged equally before the law have been trashed and thrown away.
Notice how that, again, instantly into the realm of ideology. The values and standards are being treated ideologically equally before the law, all this sort of thing, have been thrown away. It's like, and the fear in the police force is if the police are the real victims of the system that they are operating, that is oppressing us. Like, sorry, I don't want to preserve a series of institutions. I want to preserve the British people themselves. And if in the future, like in the past, we operate under different systems and institutions, then so be it. I'm sure that the people in the future will have good reason for choosing different institutions, different values, a different way of life. I will literally surrender my judgment to their judgment on this. Yeah. They will choose something that they think is good and useful for themselves, just like it was before we had these institutions.
Ultimately, what I want to defend is my children and my descendants, not Ofcom.
Yeah, exactly. Or the police.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like the post-Peelite police, whatever it is. Anyway, so he... But, okay, I realise that this seems like a very fine distinction, and, you know, maybe there are going to be people saying, well, you're being a bit harsh on that. It's like, maybe. But I am a bit sick of it. I mean, you got the... again, the sort of, like... pitching to the left on it, in a way, this is discrimination, it's racism, white lives matter. It's like, okay, but this is Yankee egalitarianism.
Well, he doesn't say white lives matter.
He says white lives matter too.
Yes, yeah. That is an important qualification.
Yeah. Isn't it?
Of course I agree with black lives matter, but white lives matters too, added as a sort of an apologetic appeal afterwards.
Yeah, and so there's an inherent egalitarianism that underpins egalitarianism and institutionalism that underpins Nigel Farage's statement on this. So it's separate from the people themselves. Well,
the point is that the whole set of language that he's using is designed to fit in like a key into the lock of the existing establishment conversation.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, he put out another emergency address in which he compared this to George Floyd and BLM and calls the left hypocrites. It's like, yeah, I think they might be hypocrites. White lives matter as much as black lives is literally a quote from that. It's all the values and standards of living in a free country have been trashed and thrown away. Enough of the positive discrimination, anti-white prejudice, a promotion of the fact that white lives matter as much as anyone. So we've got into the 1960s civil rights rhetoric, where it's anti-discrimination, no positive discrimination, and we need to just return to 1960s liberalism. And
he's at the cutting edge of pushing back on this rot from 70 years ago.
Yes. And the fact that he said white lives matter too triggered Kemi Badenoch, who attacked him, saying basically they don't.
What?
She says, quote, she was on ITV and she said, what Nigel Farage is doing is reinforcing the difference. I have said that we need to find what we have in common, not what separates us. I don't want to hear about Black Lives Matter. I don't want to hear about White Lives Matter. We all matter. Enough of this nonsense where we keep separating everyone and splitting people into different groups. We're descending into tribalism. I do not want that. So she wants the actual promise of the post-racial liberal state. The thing that Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves and all those are also agreeing with and we're also trying to get to. Britain is a nowhere place.
So we had that in the 90s, and it was pretty much working, but the left...
When we were 90% white British.
Yes, but the left couldn't leave it alone. They had to keep pushing at it, and I don't want that anymore. I want natives first.
I want a British state for British people.
Yes.
This is literally our nation state. And if we allow foreigners to live here... They live here as guests,
yes.
And they understand that they are not the primary beneficiaries of whatever the British state can provide.
Yes.
Our state.
It should be, in Britain, the British lives matter more.
Yes, and if I went to any other country, like, I mean, I've said this before, I'm a big lover of Greece. if I went to Greece, I would not expect the British, the Greek state to prioritize me in any way, shape or form.
Mm.
You know, I would expect to go there, pay my taxes and live how I wanted to live in, you know, on, by the sea or something. But I wouldn't expect to be enfranchised. I wouldn't expect special treatment. I wouldn't expect free money from the Greek state. I would expect to have to look after myself because this is a people's country.
Yes.
And I am a guest there. And so Kemi Badenoch is committed to the American, you know, all men are created British, and therefore there's no distinction between any of us. But this, as you say, the civic nationalist stuff, what she's doing here, she's saying, look, we're not, I don't want to have any divisions between any people. So the Boris wave are just as legitimate as you having ancestry that goes back to the bloody Ice Age,
yep.
Right? That's what she's saying. She, and why would she say that? Because she's a bloody anchor baby from Nigeria.
Yes.
It serves her purposes. That's why she says it. And so, no, I'm not in favour of attacking from Nigel Farage from the left, who I think is just far too much to the left on this anyway, thinking of the institutions rather than the people themselves. I'm not interested in attacking him from the left and turning us into a John Lennon, everyone happy-clappy, multi-culti society that doesn't even recognise that there are a British people still living here. So, anyway, that I'm at least, but I mean, at least... at least everyone's angry in the right direction, I suppose. You know, like, anyway. Rupert Lowe, of course, yeah. Is not having any of this, right? How many more? How many more have to die here, right? I've had enough of it, all of it. I'm going to look back in anger. I yes. urge you to do all the same.
Yes.
Jail is too good for Digwa, obviously. We're going to bring back the death penalty, by the way. And, of course, that he should be put to death.
Yes.
A restored government with the British people's approval would put Vikram Digger to death. Yes.
Yes.
Every murderer yes. should be put to death. That's what we used to do.
And to be clear, I'm very, very happy for this to apply to the white British natives as well.
Every murderer.
Yes.
Like, this is the British way.
The reason that we have a civilised country and we put the shopping cart back is not because of magic soil.
No.
It's yeah. because we evolved in a climate with tens of thousands of years of brutal winters where you have to plan ahead. You have to be respectful of your community. You have to not steal the food supplies from your neighbour because that means that his children will starve in February. You should have planned better. So for years, we have treated transgressions like that, death.
Yeah.
We have always executed our criminals. And that is why we have a population of people who have impulse control, who are community spirited, who do understand... I mean, this is remarkable. If you're not white, you might not get this, but we have a sense of guilt. Mm. That is just not common. Well,
if you're not Christian, you won't get that. That specifically is a Christian innovation. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a canard that goes around and says, we used to put to death 1% of the population. Absolutely not. We would put to death a few hundred people a year, right? But it does. You don't. It
makes a difference, though.
Exactly. It's not even that it has an expressly eugenic effect or anything like that. What it is, it's a moral effect. As in, if you commit a crime and you are caught, if you murder, for example, yeah. and you are caught, you will be hanged. Right. That's what
I suspected it's both because we've been doing it for thousands of years in this country, going back
we just weren't hanging enough people.
Yeah. Like, it's even before that, into the last ice age. I mean, it's, you know, before the Romans turned up, we had been doing this.
Sure, but okay. So in the Middle Ages, for example, or the Victorian era, we would only hang a few hundred criminals a year across the country. Most of those were in London because London was always
a great day out for the family. Come and watch the hanging.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. But it was the moral attitude, as in we believe that actually an eye for an eye in this case. And you can say what you like about English morality, but this ancient pagan truism has always been a core feature of the English morality.
It was an unapologetic upholding of a set of standards.
Yes. 100%. And the knowledge that the guilty need to get their just desserts. And even to this day, more people than not want the return of the death penalty.
There is absolutely no reason why this guy, Axel Ruder Cabana, I mean, we talked about seeing this you know, police's body cam footage. We've never seen the body cam footage from the police who attended the scene of Axel Rune Cabana's murder. Now, bear in mind, and it's so horrific, but one of the little girls who was attacked by Axel Rune Cabana, his father had to go into the mortuary to identify his daughter, and he was unable to do so. he was unable to identify his own daughter.
I'm absolutely certain that they didn't release the body cam footage for a reason.
Well, I mean, we had riots as it was. If we had seen the body cam footage from the actual Rudy Cabana scene, things would have changed a lot more than actually did.
There isn't, and I genuinely think the English in the subconsciously have this view of a kind of moral debt that the murderer incurs, that they can only pay, or at least in part, with their own life. I believe it. And there's not enough suffering that he could go through to pay it back.
I would be prepared to try, though.
Well, of course. And Rupert, of course, wants to deport any Indian who covered up for Vikram Digra, because why would you allow him to stay in your country?
Right, and I mean, the reason he got kicked out of reform and why they made up those criminal allegations against him to try and get him jailed was because he said the same thing about the grooming gangs.
Yes. Now, I realise this has gone on for a long time, but there's a little bit I want to add on the end here. So there was a debate in Parliament today or yesterday? I think it was yesterday. About the collection and publication of child sexual offender data. Because, of course, we believe the signatures of the petition that it is essential to collect, record, and publish the nationality, ethnicity, and immigration status and religion of all child sexual offenders, including gang-based crime. This comes hot on the heels of his rape gang inquiry. And as you can see, Rupert promoted this. 260,000 people supported it. And so it was debated in Parliament. Now you can watch it yourself. It's actually not terribly exciting.
I haven't seen this. What's the key takeaway?
So the key takeaway is the right does think that we should collect the ethnicity breakdown of child sexual offenders, and the left doesn't. Rupert gave an incredibly powerful speech, which is just 5 solid minutes of him laying out the worst stuff that was revealed in his rape gang inquiry as to why this is something that is the British state does not, I mean, they don't do it for a reason. I mean, they, in fact, specifically, Ian Smith explains that in 2022, the Home Office asked forces to collect ethnicity data and other data, and only 1 out of 43 police forces complied with that because they are as intrinsically anti-racist as you have suggested.
Yes. Well, I mean, every instruction that comes down about treating the British natives as second-class citizens, they comply with all of those.
Yes.
But when the instruction comes down to record some data, almost all of them, barring one, just refuse to comply.
Yeah.
So this is what I mean. The police force cannot be saved. You have to start again.
I agree. Anyway, Rupert's speech, as I said, is just 5 straight minutes of just harrowing statements from the rape gang inquiry. And so you got MPs shaming him for it. The issue of rape gangs has been weaponized and deployed by propagandists to sow racial, cultural, and religious division. Again, look at what he's appealing to. He's appealing to the security of the multicultural system that needs as minimal friction as possible in order for itself to survive. I mean, this is literally the point repeatedly. Watch this one.
The Honourable Member for Great Yarmouth said that he was going to name and shame every member of Parliament who did not attend this debate. There are 650 members of Parliament in this place, and I believe there are 50 seats around this table. And I think temperance in our language would serve the victims of this crime far better than the language of the Honourable Member. It must never be weaponised. It must never be reduced to slogans or selective outrage. It must be about truth, accountability, and above all, justice for victims. So
you can see they're trying to shame him there. I mean, I like Rupert's smirk there. You're not going to tone police me, sunshine. But they're constantly, you can't name and shame us. We're agents of the system. And you can't cause division because the system needs consistency and persistence and conformity. If you identify these divisions, just like Kemi Badenoch was trying to prevent as well, right? Then you are the thing that is the problem, not the inherent contradictions between these groups that the system is trying to manage.
Well, it is how the state works. That they diversify responsibility for everything to the point where you can never say that it was wholly one individual's fault. And if it's not wholly one individual's fault, no one can ever be held to account for anything. And the closest you can get is the term that the state loves, which is learning lessons. But no one at any point ever is held to account.
All of the shaming and browbeating
is for people who point it out.
All of it, though,
yes,
is to ensure the longevity and the continued existence of the system that is destroying us. That's what it's for. And as you can see, Rupert is beyond this at this point.
Yeah.
He's just like, this ain't going to stop me, Sunshine.
Care. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. Because it's clear that things are getting out of control, right?
Yeah.
The contradictions are just too evident. The tensions are too great. Something is going to snap. We cannot have privileges for ethnic minorities and foreign religions that exist and operate only at the expense of the native population.
Well, and what we're looking at here is the last peaceful way of this being rectified.
Yeah.
Because something is going to snap. And if it's not done through the ballot, and of course the reason why we work so hard on this is because we want the peaceful solution.
Please, God, give us the peaceful solution.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.